Hi, I'm Gaines Taylor.
And I'm Brendan Bell.
And we are Refuge Radio. Brendan, we are one podcast in. So how do you feel about that? As I nervously laugh.
I feel pretty great about it. It was the first time I had really shared my story in any sort of a public space. Well, that part of my story anyway. And I feel really good about it. I'm glad it's out there. And I hope that for those of you that have been listening, that it brought some level of encouragement. Maybe there's something in what I said and what Gaines said that spoke to you and you felt like you identified with that. And I hope that helped you see that you are not alone and there are a lot of people in the same boat. How about for you, Gaines?
I feel the same way. It was definitely this is the most public I've ever shared my story with, outside of smaller groups or one-on-one. And so that was really just, it felt good to get things out there, get parts of the story and serious parts and funny parts and just share. And hopefully people do connect because that's what this is all about. We have a great guest today and like, I can't wait to get to that. But first, we need to talk about some stuff. I want to go back to something we said last podcast that I'm laughing because it's just so, all right. I want to go back to something we said last podcast that we reserve the right to change our minds. And also I said in particular that we are not going to call anyone out. It took one podcast to change that.
That's so true.
So we have changed our mind already on that concept because
yes.
Cairn University has a social work department major, had a social work department major. The Council of Social Work Education, which is a governing body to some degree, and you can probably describe that a little better, Brendan. You are a master of social work student. They are some, are you familiar with them?
I am not. So okay. We had not really learned about the education side of social work or what the criteria is for education. But so in my education, we just learn about the NASW, the National Association of Social Worker, and their code of ethics, right, and just what the expectation for us will be going into the field itself as social workers.
Okay. Yeah. So this is some type of governing body for the education criteria. And they have said, Cairn is a conservative Christian university. That needs to be said going into this for this to make sense. They have said that they are cutting their entire social work department due to the fact that this Council of Social Work Education is going to require them to embrace a social and cultural agenda that now includes the acceptance of a view of human sexuality, gender identity, and gender expression that is inconsistent with the university's biblical position of human sexuality. I read this, and my reaction when I saw this was, what the actual fuck? And I know that's very clinical and technical, but so basically, this school is taking the stance, if you don't fit into our conservative view, we don't even want our students to learn how to help you and help assist. And this is this is from the president of the university to all the social work alumni. It's a letter going out to them. I want your thoughts, Brendan, as a student in social work.
So I'm of two minds on this. There's part of me that's like, good. In the sense that if you are not interested in actually helping people and you actually are committed to an agenda that is going to actively harm people, I don't want you in this field. So if you're going to just take yourself out of that equation, part of me is like, bye, like good riddance. I'm glad that the field is not going to be filled with more homophobia and transphobia. I feel like we have enough of that in the field already. And we honestly, even as well-meaning clinicians who are even a part of the LGBTQ plus community, we have a lot of that already internalized in us anyway, that we have to work through on our own time. And so the less that that is present, I think that's a good thing. I think also it is unfortunate that a lot of these conservative spaces that I know both of us have come out of are not open to learning and are not open to hearing other people's stories and are not open to listening to the pain of the LGBTQ plus community and looking at the research and seeing the harm that not only things such as conversion therapy, which is still legal in many states in America, have done on our community, and the not only psychological damage that has caused us, but then, you know, looking at things like minority stress theory, how that has also impacted our bodies, and looking at suicide rates and the disparities among the LGBTQ plus community, and then seeing correlations in suicidality with people that have been a part of conversion therapy and been a part of even just toxic theological spaces. It is really sad to me that all of that research and all of these statistics and stories are not welcomed. And that perspective is just not considered relevant because it goes against how they have decided to interpret a 2,000-year-old document. That to me is hard to understand. Well, I take that back. It's not hard for me to understand. I totally understand it because I was a part of that culture. It's hard for me to understand how someone can objectively say this is a good ethical decision that we're making. And this is a loving decision that we're making. And that to me, I struggle with, because love is the opposite of fear. And I feel a lot of fear in this decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you said about, like, it's not surprising, and like, it's one of those things for cis hetero people. I think there's a lot, not all, but there's surprise sometimes, like, can you believe this? You know, people come to me like, and I'm like, yeah, I can. It's extremely disappointing, but this is like par for the course. And I do want to say there are, you know, people who are in this environment who do need help, who are stuck at the Cairns of the world, who, like, this is so harmful because it's one more example of, like, a student at Cairn who's in the closet saying, oh, my school does not care, and they are taking even a harder stance. And that's what hurts. Like, I went there briefly, and I was, like, pretty open. I mean, I knew the environment. So I wasn't wearing, you know, flying a flag around. But like, I was a resource. I made it clear that I was a resource for people. You know, I did a project about, like, a youth center and stuff for LGBT. And it's not about me, but it's about other people. And that's why we're doing this podcast, so people can tell their stories. And so that the people who are in the closet there, who are getting the leadership or hearing these messages for the leadership, realize they're not alone, because they need that hope when these messages of, like, quite frankly, hate are just, like, being poured on them and saying, we don't even want to mentally and emotionally help you, and we're cutting a program that will.
Exactly. We would only welcome this program if it, well, I mean, this is not how they would frame it, but this is the reality. We would only welcome this program if it emotionally and mentally harmed you.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a terrible message for queer youth in these spaces. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I have so much more to say on this, but we don't have time. I wanted to, like, touch the surface of this because It's new. It's important. Like I said, this is like exactly why we're doing this podcast, to tell people stories and to give people hope.
Yeah.
Speaking of hope, though, and advocacy, we have a wonderful guest today, and it's about time we introduce them. So without further ado, let's get to talking about Christina Jackson.
Christina Jackson is a Northern California resident, was crowned Miss Wheelchair California in March 2018, and is currently an actor, singer, and comic book writer, as well as an advocate for the LGBTQ plus and disability community. Christina is signed to MDT Agency and is the co-host of Brave Maker Filmmakers Talk Show, aired weekly on the Brave Maker YouTube channel, as well as the co-host of the Wheel Queens of San Francisco podcast, alongside current Miss Wheelchair California, Christine Burke.
With a background in corporate finance and a BS in business administration, Christina is passionate about encouraging women with varying abilities to pursue their passions fearlessly and lean in or roll in to not only the boardroom, but any space they can envision themselves. A Bay Area resident, Christina has been inspired by Silicon Valley movers and shakers, from Lean In author Sheryl Sandberg to San Francisco's mayor London Breed. Christina shares her life and her work on multiple social media platforms as a way to inform and educate others on celebrating life with different abilities and the importance of working hard to contribute to the community of over 54 million Americans living with disabilities.
I loved this opportunity that we got to chat with Christina about their life and their experiences, and just to hear their perspective on spirituality and kind of where they were able to land with all of that and the peace that they have found. I found that so inspirational and challenging, to be honest.
I agree as well. I found their story about just being so positive and that energy and being an advocate in all aspects of their lives is unreal to me, honestly. I personally have epilepsy, and just the drain and like trying to advocate for one aspect and easily getting like tired of that, and that's only one area, is enough for me at times. And being queer on top of that, it's just like, it's so easy to get negative. I mean, we were talking about that at the beginning of the show, but for someone who's so positive in all three of these areas, it's mind blowing to me. And I really appreciated that encouragement today.
Yeah. Well, we hope y'all find as much inspiration and encouragement listening to Christina's story as we did.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Christina. We're excited to chat with you a little bit about your journey and also what you are currently working on in regards to your advocacy work, specifically with Brave Maker Productions. So thank you so much for joining us on our show.
Well, thank you, Brendan and Gaines, for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming out. So, like, tell us a little bit of your background starting out. Like, where did you come from? You're in California right now, right?
I am in California now, but I'm originally from Pennsylvania. So I know that's something we had in common. I was born in Westchester, Pennsylvania, actually, and spent a lot of time in Philly with my grandmother before moving to Stockton, California, which is the Central Valley. And I've been here since 1990, and I probably would never go back to the West Coast simply because of the weather. And I love it out here now. So I'm definitely a West Coast girl. So, and I came to California, and in Stockton, I went to high school and the University of the Pacific in Stockton, and I studied corporate finance. I went to their Eberhardt School of Business. And then later, years later, I kind of fell backwards into the filmmaking community with Bravemaker Productions, and I've been a part of that company now for, we're actually celebrating 3 years, June 1st. And I joined, I joined in the spring of 2019. So it's super exciting working with them. And they definitely are about sharing brave stories that elevate humanity. And I'm a fan. As an advocate, I'm a huge fan of that.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Bravemaker. I mean, that's how I got connected with you. We have a mutual friend through there with Tony.
Yeah. So Tony's great. He's my co-host. He's my boss. He's my producer. Like, Tony's a really good friend. And I was connected with him through a mentor, Fernanda Castello. And she was like, you have to come meet Tony. You got to come to this red carpet event. He was screening I'll Push You. And at the time I was like, I really can't. Like, I just got out the hospital. I came from Las Vegas. I did this event at the Consumer Electronics Show. Came back with pneumonia. I was, when I say under the weather, I mean, I was really under the weather. And, but she just was like, you have to come meet Tony. And when she said Tony's name, I was like, all right, I have to come meet Tony. Cause something else extraordinary that happened while I was in Vegas for CES, I got to connect with my little brother who I hadn't seen in years. He just had been all over the country. And we happened to be in Vegas at the same time. So he came out to the Rio Hotel, which is where me and my family were staying. And I got to hang out with him. And just a few days after we left Vegas, he passed away unexpectedly.
Oh, wow.
So damn. We ended up, what I say, I ended up in Vegas, not for the Consumer Electronics Show. My sponsor brought me out. Shout out to Will. They make the power chair that I use now. It's an amazing company out of Japan. They invited me out. And I thought, and that was like, it's a spectacular event. But we were really there to say goodbye to Tony. And so when my mentor, Fernando, was like, you got to come meet Tony, I thought, oh, this is not, I don't believe in coincidences. I was like, all right. So I dragged myself out the house and made it to this red carpet event. And I met Tony. And, you know, the rest is history. We've been working together, collaborating and sharing brave stories ever since.
That's beautiful. So I know, Christina, as you're probably aware, a lot of what we're doing on this podcast is kind of creating a safe space for people to share their stories and their spiritual journeys. And I was wondering if you could share a little bit about yourself, about what was your spirituality growing up or your religious upbringing, and what was that like?
I was brought up in a Baptist church, and so I always... And I think it's important to say I didn't start with this. I usually do, but my pronouns are he, she, they, and I identify as queer and I'm non-binary. And coming up in the church, you know, I would hear things about homosexuals and the queer community that were not shared in a positive light. So I knew really early on that this was not something that was really celebrated, but I absolutely loved practicing Christianity. I love the fellowship. I love being there with my family. I love the love and support. And so I kind of just, although that was, you know, not so great, I kind of just pushed that aside and I made excuses for the adults and people around me who were spreading that kind of negativity and that kind of information that wasn't helpful for young queer people. I don't know if maybe adults don't realize the things that they're saying, like you're impacting the lives of the youth, you know, when we're just trying to find our way. And I did really struggle for a time with thoughts of suicide after I'd come out, after I came out, and just the backlash from friends and family and adults that I trusted, you know, that were now telling me that there was a part of myself that wasn't right, that there was something wrong with me. And I was coming to a place where luckily I was like, there is not something wrong with me. There's something wrong outside of me with the understanding of this. But it's still, you know, as a teenager, you don't have the emotional capacity to really deal with everything coming down on you. And I struggled in that place for a long time privately because it was something so shameful because I thought you have everything going for you. You know, you have both your parents. I grew up middle class. Like I had everything that you could have wanted, you know, getting a really exceptional education. I was in the IB program. I played sports. I was in a marching band. I played first violin. Like I had this beautiful life. And here I was struggling on the side, like when I was alone with these thoughts of if I should end my life, because they're telling me like, there's no future for me. And what are you thinking? And this is wrong. And it just seemed like such a hostile environment I was entering after coming out. But religion was still a beautiful aspect of loving yourself, putting love first and foremost. I was like, this is the core of the message that I've been getting. Because when I say I was brought up in the church, as long as I can remember, like, I was in the church, I was in the pews, I was listening to the gospel and the choir and going to Sunday school. So I had those lessons in me. And so I just relied, I fell back onto that. I was like, the core message of this, what we're practicing, is love. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to love myself the best I can and let other people love me and see my way out of that. So I love religion. I'm much more spiritual now. I went through a separation in 2014 from my wife. And during that time, I picked up a book called Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And this book dramatically changed my life. And I share it all the time. And so although I don't attend church services regularly anymore, I'm very spiritual and I meditate. I meditate on love and abundance and spreading those messages. And that's what really Tony and I do with Bravemaker. We put that into all of our work. Actually, when I met him, I noticed he has love tattooed on his forearm. I was like, this is not, there's something special about him. Yeah.
That's wonderful that and beautiful that you say that, Christina, because when I was looking at all of the things that you have achieved in your life and what the work that you are doing, love is like the word I would choose to express everything you do, because it's very much directed at loving the world and loving your neighbor. And that just kind of exudes out of the work that you do. And that's wonderful.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah, and it's been a journey. I struggled again. So I joined the disability community in 2002. I broke my neck snowboarding and I was 19. And so now I was a queer teenager trying to tackle life with paralysis, life as a quadriplegic, which I still have now. And it's, I think it was 19 years this January that I celebrated, you know, surviving a spinal cord injury. And that is a tremendous journey in love, because up until that point, I had a very performance-based sense of self. What yeah. I could do. Sister, picking up my little sisters from school, what I was doing on the field, I was pursuing a career as a professional soccer player, you know, so all these things, showing up at Outback Steakhouse, I worked there, you know, it's like, I just measured myself on what I could do. And once I lost my physical abilities, I was lost. I was like, well, who am I? If I can't play soccer, if I can't dress or bathe myself, like what is this to love? Like, what about this experience is there to love? And it was a tremendous journey in really rediscovering an inner life instead of basing everything on externals. And that was just so, it was so liberating. I think that's why I talk about love so frequently, because it's so shocking how powerful it can be in your life. If you ask yourself the question, what in my life am I struggling with right now that love can't conquer? And just sit with that. And that's what I do all the time.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I love. What, first of all, thank you for sharing that all with us. Second of all, Christina, I love what you said about this external, like we kind of base our worth on these external things that we accumulate or these bars that we set for ourselves, the things that we can do. And you talked about kind of this, you shifted into an internal perspective. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what that looked like for you.
Absolutely. Shifting my focus and energy on what I was doing externally, my job title, physically what I could do, you know, the ability to drive, and then start focusing on not the doings, but the being, the human being, and being comfortable with where I was at and what I'm able to do. And just to know that your value is not in what you're able to do in your physical body. You're so much more than that. So we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And this is very ephemeral and fleeting. It just feels so permanent and heavy when you're in the body and you're in the physical world and that's all you know. And that's all I knew for a long time. And if I hadn't become disabled, I don't know that I definitely wouldn't have embarked on this journey as I have. But I think it took intense suffering for a long time for me to finally crack and be like, well, what am I really doing? Like, what is causing this suffering? And is it even necessary? And what I love about the power of now is that it tells you that suffering is not necessary. Like once you realize that it's serving a purpose, identify that purpose and start moving in that direction, like suffering has served its purpose and now it's done, you know? And so I finally got to that place and I was so relieved to be there, because I just suffered for such a long time trying to be like, well, measuring myself up to other people and what they were doing and their physical abilities. And whatever, like at 19, all my friends were like going after school and traveling and dating and like doing things that I wasn't able to do, or at least I didn't believe I was able to do. So the inner journey just helped me to redefine what was important to me. And it turned out I could be happy without walking. I had to answer that question for myself. I was like, can you really be satisfied with your physical abilities? And the answer was yes. It just took a long time to get there, but I'm in a good place now. And I celebrate the inner life far more and then the outside transforms. Like once you transform the inside and you become a loving, accepting being and you live in yes. And I accept this and you move forward and you stop struggling against everything, then the outside transforms. So just watching my outer life transform has been confirmation that I'm on the right track. And this is a message that you should share.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I find that so inspirational because I think today's society, and this is what it's like, everything is performance based. And like, what I find so inspirational by what you're saying is you've gone above that and been like, no, this is not important. This performance based is not what's really about. And I think that's so awesome to see that, and such like good to keep in mind because it goes so counterculture to what we've been taught.
Yeah, we've definitely been taught to chase things that are shiny, things that are green, and those things can be so empty, but it's hard to know that until you have tasted them and see like, oh, this wasn't you continue to search for something. What are you searching for? You know, once you have that title, or you have that job, or you have that spouse, or you live in that location that you thought, once I have those things, I'll be satisfied, and you realize you're not, then it will direct you inside if you're able to see that it's pointing you in another direction. If you're looking for peace and satisfaction, and I want to say like go further than that, ecstasy and pleasure and contentment, a joy that you cannot get from like a fancy car or $1 million house, you just can't. Like you have to know that is within you. I think that's in the Trolls movie too. I spend a lot of time with a 4-year-old. I've been sheltering him my knees, right? Have you guys seen the Trolls movie? They are dropping some gems in that movie. And Poppy actually says like, happiness is something inside you. I was like, wow, that's so profound to be teaching children that. Right?
Yep.
It's
true.
I think the greatest truths in like stories are in kids' literature and kids' film, all that. Yeah. But like adults are like, no, we're too cool for that. So
I'm not too cool. I mean, no. It's been beautiful. We've had the last year to spend so much time in the house and together. And you know, kids, they don't just watch a movie once. They watch it 5, 6, 10 times. Okay. So you're getting these messages in your spirit one way or another. And they're beautiful messages.
I agree. I feel like the kids' movies these days have way better messages than the messages I got out of, most of the kids' movies that I watched as a kid. I felt like they were very much like romance and all of these, like aim for these ideals and it will solve all your problems. And I'm like, no.
No, what's great, just last night, my niece was watching Peter Pan. And I was kind of not paying attention. My sister was in the room too. She's like, all the Disney movies now have to have this preface where they apologize for the racism and the sexism. Like, I was like, why are we watching this? Like, turn this off. So that's what we were raised on. Like the Peter Pan cartoon from, I think it was like the late 80s, early 90s, horrifying messages in that movie. Very questionable, problematic content. And it definitely has gotten a lot better. Yeah, dramatically better. Now that we're more aware and more mindful of the messages that we're sharing in film. And that's what I love about working with Bravemaker, is being able to talk about the responsibility of filmmakers, because they have such a tremendous impact on all of our lives, whether we realize it or not. Part of what I really struggled with at 19, becoming disabled, looking out into film, I didn't really see that many positive role models, people with disabilities other than Professor X, who were just living their lives and celebrating and doing things. It wasn't normalized. It was something that was like, if you had a disability, you were shown in a very poor light. And I didn't know growing up, you know, as an able-bodied person, you don't even think about the impact that can have on you if you join this community that you don't really see favorably. What would that mean for your identity? And for me, it was catastrophic, but I'm really happy to be on the other side of that now and able to do something about it and to talk about those issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I did see that a lot of what Brave Makers is trying to do is kind of create more of that environment in film and media to increase diversity, equity, and inclusion and representation. Can you tell us a little bit about what that has looked like for you and your work?
Well, I want to give a lot of credit to director Tony Gapastione because he's cast me in his upcoming movie. So he has his finger really on the pulse of what viewers want but don't know that they want. So you want to see people on screen who are diverse, who come from different gender expressions, physical abilities, intellectual abilities. Like, you want this rich variety on screen because this is reflective of the world and life. And these are languages. And this disability was a language that I had no idea. I didn't speak. I didn't know about the world, but now I do, and I'm fluent, and it's beautiful. And I'm able to talk to people in the community and understand their hopes and dreams and fears and express them in a way, you know, with Tony, through story, through visual storytelling, which is so important. The representation is so important because sometimes when you don't see it, you don't believe you can do it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you see something, you're like, oh, wow, she did that. Well, I could do that too, especially if you're competitive. I have a very competitive nature. If I'm seeing other people do things that I thought were impossible or challenging, it plants a seed, you know, it plants a seed in all of our minds what we're capable of. And so telling these brave stories, showing intersectionality, showing representation, people of all shapes, sizes, color, ability, it's just making the world a richer place to exist in. And I think that's what we all want for ourselves and for our kids, our nieces, nephews, you know, generations to come. We want to be elevated. I think that's what we want, especially after looking at this last year and seeing so much small-mindedness and hate, and the repercussions of that have been devastating for everyone. And that's why it's really important that we all speak up, whether you see yourself, you know, as part of any of the marginalized groups. It's impacting all of us.
Exactly. Christina, you probably don't know this, but I am studying to be a social worker right now. And so you said a word that perked up my little social work antenna. You said the word intersectionality. And I would love to hear from you how you have experienced intersectionality in your own life, whatever in that you want to discuss, because you do have a large intersection of different identities that are tragically marginalized in our society.
I do. So as an African-American queer person with a disability, I am sitting at the corner of multiple marginalized groups. And I remember when I was first injured, someone coming in the hospital room and saying, like, oh, my God, like, oh, no, she's gay and disabled and she's Black. Good luck with that. Mm. And I thought, wow, you know, that's a positive message. And now I see them all as assets, as strengths, as opportunities. And it took, and that was a journey. That was a journey that love, you know, helped me conquer and get to. So now I see them as assets and as languages. So these are all languages now that if you embrace, now you can speak to different communities and understand, again, their needs, their fears, their hopes and desires. And always when I'm talking to people, we all want the same thing. We all want the same thing, regardless of where you're at, you know, whatever your gender is, your sexuality, your income. We all want peace and love and joy in our lives. We don't want struggle and hatred and the negativity. Those are things that we become conditioned to accept. And even more horrifying than that, to practice, you know, to oppress others in order to elevate ourselves. I feel like that's a very mindless practice that a lot of us do unconsciously. As a Black person, especially in the last year, we're fighting for our civil rights. And I've been in communities with Black people where they're disparaging the queer community. And I'm like, whoa, or I'll go to a function where there's no accessibility, there's no ramp, there's no elevator. And it's like, you cannot remain homophobic while trying to end racism. It can't work. You have to open your heart to everyone and love everyone if we're going to come up with a solution. So I love it now to be a part of the intersectionality, part of marginalized groups. Because it gives you insight. You know, you're on the inside looking out instead of people on the outside looking in, like, well, we don't understand what they need. We don't understand their demands, or, well, I'm on the inside and I can tell you, you know, what it is that we need. And we want the same things that you want. So it's cool. It's a cool place to be now.
What's some encouragement you'd have for, like, if someone is just now disabled and is part of one of these other communities, like, what's some encouragement? Because I know, at least in the queer community, if you're not, you know, physically fit, or if you're not in a good physical form, then that is something that is, like, looked down upon. Mm-hmm. Just on that level. That's more my question. That's more what I was getting at. So, like, what's some encouragement from that side that you've got through, that you've battled through and worked through to get to this such a positive outlook you have?
I love that question. Start, because I struggled so severely at 19, you know, waking up in the ICU, having a doctor tell you, you'll never walk again. You might be able to speak if you work really hard in respiratory therapy. That is something that you could recover. And just things look so bleak. You know, it's like just hours before you were going to be playing professional soccer. And now you're in the ICU. They're talking you through a surgery that you'll need to have to, you know, stabilize your neck and different things like that. So what I would say, coming from that really dark, difficult place, find your tribe. Even before you find your voice, I remember being in rehab and going to the peer support meetings. I couldn't really speak very well. I could say one or two words because I wasn't able to breathe because I fractured my C4, C5. So breathing was extremely difficult. So I wouldn't really speak, but I would just go and sit and listen to other people who were 5, 10, 15 years out from their injury, look at their lives, see the things they were doing. And it was phenomenally encouraging. Again, representation. You know, these were people who I wasn't seeing at Starbucks. They weren't on TV shows. They weren't my professors, unfortunately. They weren't in hospitals. Those things are changing now. More disabled people are moving into those roles. But 20 years ago, it wasn't really like that. So you had to have someone who was beautiful enough to come back and share their journey, which is why I'm so passionate about doing it now. And so I had people come in, and I couldn't believe people with disabilities as severe as mine, they were driving. They were having kids, they were getting married, they were doing everything that I wanted to do that I thought when I became paralyzed, I wouldn't be able to. So find your tribe. After you find your tribe, you will begin to find your voice. Am I answering this question? So that's where I started. And then years later, becoming an advocate, that was another tribe for becoming Miss Wheelchair California. I got to meet so many other queens who had disabilities who were also about elevating causes that they were passionate about. And about normalizing disability culture. I mean, this is something that every human being will probably have to face through aging, injury, or a disease. Something most of us have to face, but we don't really set up our lives to be successful in that space. And I'm not really certain why that is. I think it's something difficult that we haven't wanted to face, but it doesn't need to be. And it's I'm so glad that we're talking about it now. So someone in that position, for disability, find your tribe. For the queer community, because it's so different, and I know what you're talking about. Like, if you're there's such an emphasis put on physical appearance and money and what you do, there really can be, and that's really just being comfortable with yourself and your queerness, you know what I mean, and your queer expression. You know, you don't have to be dripping in Louis Vuitton. You have to feel good about right, you don't have to have six-pack abs. You have to feel good about your body and what it's able to do. And again, you can't be performance-based. Like, you really have to make that a priority and shift away from that. And you'll realize once you try to do that, how hard it is to do, how hard it is not to care about your aesthetic and your appearance and your money and being around other people and being comfortable in your skin, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that, that's such an awesome response. I think finding that community, finding your tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can I shout out Play Out Apparel? This is a non-binary queer underwear company. You want to follow them on Instagram if you want to find a tribe of queer people who are not focused on income and externals, like, that are really focused about the heart and the human being and what's going on in our communities and what we care about. That is a really beautiful company. Shout out to Abby and Liz for, you know, running this beautiful inclusive, like all inclusive, all shapes and sizes. Their models come in all shapes and sizes and colors. It's phenomenal. It's what we're talking about. They're living what we're talking about.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's great.
Something else you mentioned in that story that you shared with us just then, Christina, is you talked about being Miss Wheelchair California. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that experience and what that looked like for you.
Yeah, that was wild. I was 2017. I was at the Abilities Expo. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's a phenomenal, if you can imagine, like a huge warehouse filled with all the latest and greatest for the disability community. I mean, like the wildest hand cycles and roll-in showers, like all the coolest stuff. It's like the CES for the disability community. And I was there with a company called NorCal SCI. Shout out to them. They do amazing work here in Northern California for people who have suffered spinal cord injuries, for their friends and family, and getting them back on their feet and celebrating life. And so I was there. They had a booth and they invited me. And I was there at the booth shooting a documentary called My Falling Out Story. And so I was just having people come over and tell me, what was it like the first time you fell out your chair after becoming disabled? Because this is an experience, if you are using a wheelchair or power chair, that we almost all have gone through. And it can be really shameful and difficult. I remember the first time I fell out my chair, I didn't get back in it for months. I was devastated and I just felt like so embarrassed and ashamed. And now I tell the story how I was in San Francisco with a bunch of friends out drinking and whatever. And I just about fell out my chair and they grab you, you bounce back and you keep going. And that comes from wisdom and experience and just being on this journey and becoming more comfortable with yourself and accepting life as it is and not expecting it to be perfect and just going with the flow. And so that's what I was doing at the Abilities Expo. And I was out rolling around and someone came up and gave me a flyer and said, you should compete for Miss Wheelchair California. And I tossed a flyer aside. I was like, I'm not doing any pageants. Like I was dressed, it was Halloween. So I was dressed up as Wonder Woman, ironically, because I write comic books now. But at the time, I wasn't even about that life. I was about my company and making accessories for wheelchairs. And so it was just wild. And a month later, another mentor reached out to me. And he was like, have you submitted your application and stuff? I was like, I'm not doing that. And he informed me that it was a leadership competition. And then my ears perked up. And then I was like, And so then I applied and they sponsored me, which was really beautiful. And I competed and I didn't win. Actually, I came in first runner up. Shout out to Dr. Michelle Hernandez. She actually won Miss Wheelchair California. And then due to health reasons, she had to step down. And that happened, I want to say, about a week after the pageant. I was hours from boarding a flight to Cuba when I got the call, hey, you're Miss Wheelchair. Wow. And they brought the contract and they brought the crown and they broke it down for me about my behavior in public. And I was like, whoa, like this is real now. So Cuba was my first event as Miss Wheelchair California. It dramatically changed my life. It helped me find my voice as an advocate. Not just a person living with a disability, but someone who could have the power to impact lives of people living with disabilities, those who love them, and really just everyone by continuing to go out and normalize these conversations and celebrate life. When it comes to representation, I take that very seriously because I feel like it's what you do when you're out, when people can see you. It's what's coming out of your mouth. It's how you're living your life. I don't really preach too much or judge. I just try to live by example because that's what has the most profound impact on me. Not really what you're saying, but what I see you doing.
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for sharing all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about this stuff all day.
Yeah. Tell us a little about your comic book.
The comic book is so wild. It really has transformed from what it originally was. And then shout out to Chadwick, although he's no longer with us, from Wakanda, from Black Panther. But when he passed away last year, I was so devastated. And I was in the process of writing a comic book. It was coming together. But when he passed, I was just like, this is a person you didn't know personally. He's also a Meisner trained actor. I'm studying the Meisner technique in acting school. So I just felt this tremendous connection to him and inspired by his work. I was like, you know what? I'm going to make a commitment. I'm going to take all this love and energy and I'm going to focus it into my comic book. And I'm going to make a commitment live on YouTube to be in costume until I publish my first comic book. And so that's what I did. And so he really helped me to get like super focused and determined to see this project through to the end. Cause as a creative, I don't know if you guys know, like a lot of projects, like you get really excited, really inspired. And then after a couple months, like things can kind of fizzle and the energy can go out. I needed fire from King T'Challa really to see this project through to the end. And so I love him for that, for the work he did, for sharing his life with us. So I'm writing a comic book. My protagonist is, her name is Goldilocks. She's an eco warrior. She's a futurist and a scientist. And I don't want to give too much away, but she does become paralyzed in some crazy lab explosion. And then lots of things come after that. And she has to do some soul searching. And ultimately, though, the mission of this comic book is to end poverty. So I will say that. I'll leave that teaser. I won't say, you know, the nature of the story. But ultimately, her mission is to end worldwide poverty. So and I'm working with Ron Mars, who he did a lot of stories for Green Lantern. He's worked for Marvel for over 30 years. He's a phenomenal comic book coach to have. Again, thank you, Tony. Tony is like the angel and the gift that just keeps giving. He knew what I was doing. It came across his email. He forwarded it to me, JK Studios. I reached out to them. I took a class. I loved what Ron was doing. I got to meet a bunch of other comic book writers, which again, find your tribe, right? It's not that awesome. Yep. That often you'll find yourself in a Zoom with like 20 other comic book writers writing crazy stuff. Like you can't even imagine, werewolves and vampires and like evil Supermans, like just wild things. And so that environment was so cool. And again, like it set me on fire and I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. So I've been working with Ron. We're working on issue 2 now. We may have just solidified our artist. She's out of Argentina, fingers crossed. She wants to take on this project. So it's insanely exciting. I love the work that I'm doing and I can't wait to share.
So this is obviously like a pretty personal project too. I mean, super. Yeah.
Well, actually, I'll tell you, that was a tip that they gave us like the first day of comic book writing class. Make your stories personal. Those are the stories that resonate with us. That's why we love Superman. That's why we love Spider-Man, because you can see yourself in these characters and you could see them like overcoming challenges that we face. And so that I think that's what's so alluring about superheroes, especially ones like Spider-Man. Like you could see their humanity, but they're going to have to overcome it anyway. And we love seeing how they figure out ways to do that. So yeah, I've put a lot of myself into this comic book and how I'm overcoming challenges. And it's going to be a very vulnerable personal story to release, but at the same time, I'm thrilled to be doing it.
That's so awesome. I'm excited to read it when it comes out. I'm definitely a bit of a comic nerd. So
yeah, I am also highly intrigued by this premise and very excited to read it when it comes out.
Awesome. I love hearing that. Yeah, for sure. And you can check out, I do a lot of cosplay, a lot of superhero mashups, hashtag KWRAY cosplay on Instagram. So I think the last one I did, we had the screenwriter for Mortal Kombat on the show, Greg Russo. And so I did a Sonya Blade meet Superman cosplay mashup. And I'm having a ball with it. It's a lot of fun.
That's incredible. I love that. And I feel you on the creative process sometimes stalling.
Right?
That is very much something I've experienced as well. So definitely.
Yeah. And I've been like sharing what I'm doing with you guys. Like that holds me responsible because I know I was like, man, Brendan and Gaines, they're going to be like, hey, where's your comic book at? You got to get
no, that is a the fire.
Well, that's the nice thing. I may have creative projects too, but if I don't advertise them here, no one's going to ask me about them. So, yeah. That's great. Just thanks for like coming on and sharing just this inspirational story about like how it's not about like performance, what we can do. It's how we impact people. And it's about finding tribe and just loving others and really the main things in life.
Yeah, the beautiful things in life, the love and community and connection and support. Yeah, I love that.
Christina, I'm wondering as a sort of closing question, what is something that you would like to see people that are maybe people that are cisgender, white, heteronormative, able-bodied, what are things that they can do to be allies, or as we like to say in Social Work, co-conspirators, to advocate for people that are different than them?
Oh, I love that. Have the bravery to initiate these conversations to help normalize life for everyone. So if there is a group of people that you know inside that you particularly are uncomfortable addressing, so maybe, you know, if you're cisgendered and you're straight, maybe it's the queer community, maybe it's the Black community, start immersing yourself in those worlds, learn the language, start getting comfortable and brave enough to start asking, hey, how can I help? How can I be an ally? What are your struggles right now? How can I show up for you? Create spaces where people like me feel comfortable, you know, to speak up and feel supported and feel loved. Just spread love, like openly talk, like love is so recognizable. I would know if you were coming from a loving place. If you asked me, Christine, you know, what is it like being disabled? And what are some things that I could do that would make, you know, life better for you? What are some challenges that you're facing right now? What are some bills or measures that we could be voting on, you know, because politics play a huge role in creating a landscape that's comfortable for everyone to live in, mindful of things that are happening at the highest level and try to impact lives at the highest level that you have the power to do. So use your power to help elevate the lives of people who are marginalized and learn their languages and start being comfortable with them and start, you know, showing love for them. That's the best way. That's what I would say.
I love that. Learn their languages. That's beautifully put. Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So how can people follow you online in a non-creepy way? Like,
I love finding new artists and new people online, and I really go all in. So definitely, I'm at ChristinaJackson.com. Check out my website. And I'm more active on Instagram. So I'm always posting our shows and what I'm up to. So Christina Ray Jackson on Instagram. And I'll do the spelling because it's different. Thanks, Mom. KrystinaWray. Last name Jackson, JackSon. And I started using like my full name after watching Dolomite and discovering Rudy Ray Moore. And I just was like so blown away.
Yes.
If you're not familiar with him, Eddie Murphy has a movie out on Netflix about his life and what he did as an actor, as an African-American. It's so inspiring. I mean, talk about get it done. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect, but done and get your work out there. So that's how you can find me. Yeah. Instagram, Christina Ray Jackson, website, ChristinaJackson.com. I'd love to connect with you and feel free to Instagram stalk me or shoot me a message.
Awesome. Thank you. And we're also going to throw that in the description of the episode as well. So, all right. Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us. And we will definitely keep in touch and wait for that comic book and bug you about the comic book. So
exactly.
Thank you guys for having me. It was beautiful.